Joining me in the studio today is Brittany Horning. She is CPA here in Corinth. She is BR Horning CPA. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I was wonderful. I didn't know if I'd ever get you on the air. You had claimed to be nervous, but you certainly speak well. So that's kind of a good thing.
Well, thanks.
It's tax season.
Correct.
Taxes. Everybody's thinking about taxes right now and what to do. Let's start off with some of the common mistakes that people make when they're getting ready to file or the end of the year comes.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this several times, either with you or in passing, that it's really important to engage with your tax professional before the end of the year, whether you're looking for a new one or just to make sure you have everything buttoned up. You want to really be talking to people before even the end of November. If you are looking for a new accountant, you wait until the end of December or even January to try and find somebody, you are too late. So chances are they're full and you're going to be looking at filing an extension and probably filing after the April 15th deadline or filing them yourself, which is happening a lot as well. We have a huge national shortage of tax professionals and more people who need tax returns done than we have qualified people to do them. And so I think that's like the biggest thing that people should be thinking about in terms of year end and mistakes and what to look for and what to expect. You know, we're all doing our best and we appreciate a lot of patience from our community. And then the other thing too, is I have a lot of people asking for their W-2s for some of the payroll clients that I serve. And while we love to get those out as early as possible, the filing season doesn't even open with the IRS until I think it's January 29th. So even if people get their tax forms early in January, they can't even file until the end of the month. So
what sort of person gets value of doing quarterly returns versus annual returns? Is there a certain tax bracket? Is there a certain income bracket that people are in that it's more beneficial for them to file quarterly?
So when we're talking about filing quarterly estimates, we're talking about prepaying in the tax liability that you expect to have during the year for the next year's filing season. So there's not necessarily a I should or I shouldn't discussion around that. You're either required to or you're not. So if your tax liability is expected to be more than $1,000, you're required to pay in estimated taxes, you're required to pay in estimated taxes for the next year's filing. Otherwise, you're looking at penalties and interest for underpayment of estimated taxes.
Wow, I didn't realize that that was a required thing. I thought it was like, well, I know I'm going to owe a lot of money next year, so I'll prepay.
I mean, you can choose right not to, but you'll have penalties and interest.
I see.
And there's a lot of calculations with that that get pretty complicated. But in general, if you're expecting to owe more than $1,000, and if your income is relatively even every year, most people know that my income tax liability is always going to be $1,000 over what I have paid in through withholdings. So those people are typically accustomed to paying in those quarterly estimates. Where you get some people who get to be confused on that are people who have a spike in income or newly retired people who maybe are losing out on some withholdings that they're used to having paid in. And so there's some sort of substantial change to their income that might trigger estimated taxes for them that they're not used to paying. Or maybe they start a business. You know, those all of those factors would impact whether or not they have to pay estimates.
Florence is a very big retirement community. What are some of the things that retirement people need to know? Like, you know, if they have a 401k or something like that, are there things that they need to be aware of as far as how that money sits in their accounts?
When we're talking about retirement accounts in terms of income tax, if that taxpayer has a traditional IRA or several traditional IRAs or a 401k, once they turn 74, they are required to take what they call a required minimum distribution or an RMD. And if you wait until the year you turn 74, you have to take your first one by April 1st of that year. And then you have to take another one by December 31st. And so some taxpayers might choose to take the first one the year they turn 73 and then another one the year they turn 74 just to even things out. But it really depends on the individual taxpayer and what's going on with their income. Specifically with IRAs, you can group all of those together. So you can take the value of all of your IRAs and choose to draw on one and not on others. 401ks, you have to take into account differently. And I think another thing that people don't necessarily think about with IRAs is that you can do what's called a qualified charitable distribution, where you can transfer money directly from your IRA to a charity of your choice. As long as you never take possession of that money, it can go directly to a charity, typically one that you would already be contributing to. So if it is part of your philanthropic mission to give the Humane Society $5,000 a year or your local church, most taxpayers now, at least the average taxpayer, isn't itemizing at the federal level anyway. And so if you're making these charitable contributions, you're not getting a federal benefit from it, or likely you aren't. And so this allows you to get a deduction for those contributions where you might not normally get one, at least at the federal level.
I hear a lot of people talking about setting up trusts and things like that. And I'm guessing that every state has sort of a different way or a different way those are set up, a different benefit or a different value in that. How might that differ, say, from Oregon to California?
Well,
because we do have a lot of folks that kind of move up here.
That's true. That's true. And that actually brings up a really good point. In when I interview clients for the first time, if they have moved here from California, a lot of times they don't know that Oregon has an estate tax for estates that are valued more than $1 million. So there are pretty significant tools that can be used to help mitigate some of that estate tax. And having a trust is one of those. So if you have somebody who had a trust in California, but now that they live in Oregon, they really should have that looked at by an attorney to get it restated to Oregon law. Or if it's more than 4 or 5 years old, it's always good to have an attorney revisit that in case new laws come into place that, you know, you hadn't considered when the trust was first drawn up.
What point does someone go, I really need a CPA, or I really need a professional?
You know, it used to be that people felt like they needed an accountant or a CPA when they bought a house, because they went, oh my gosh, my taxes are so much more complicated now because I'm itemizing my deductions. And now that we have this higher standard deduction, that might not necessarily be the case unless you're itemizing for Oregon. But even then, it's you got your income, you got your deductions, you got your tax. If that's the case and you feel pretty confident in plugging that in to the computer, I think that you're probably fine. If you have specific questions, you know, a lot of those like TurboTax, they do offer, you know, support with filing, same with H&R Block. Those simple returns are perfectly fine to be done by those agencies. The IRS has a free e-file option as well, depending on your level of comfort doing the return. Where it starts to get more complicated is if you have any sort of business, whether it's a sole proprietorship or pass-through specifically, because then you have to keep track of basis.
And what is a pass-through?
A pass-through is an S corporation or partnership or trust, really. Any kind of income that gets passed through via a K-1. So some other entity provides a form for you to report that income on your tax return rather than the entity paying income taxes at their level.
I understand that. I get a K-1 every year.
So that makes your taxes a little bit more complicated.
Right.
Yeah. Investments sometimes might require a certain level of expertise, especially if you're investing in state and municipal bonds, federal bonds, and the level at which you're investing in those. You might be leaving some money on the table, so to speak. With rental properties. So understanding the laws around depreciating property and equipment within your rentals or your business requires some pretty specific knowledge on the useful lives that might be applied to those properties. I see a lot of tax returns coming to me where people have depreciated land, for example, or they have failed to take depreciation on a building that is being used in, say, a rental property. And now we have to do this really fun tax form to recapture all of those lost deductions in the current year, which can be really cool and really fun, but very expensive for a taxpayer to pay somebody to do.
So I guess I don't get it, because you're talking about a depreciation on a rental property mm-hmm. that is also appreciating in value. Mm-hmm. So how does that work?
That's a really good question. So when you buy property, you are assigned cost basis in that property. So you can take a deduction for what you paid for something, even though the building itself is appreciating in value. So say you buy a house for $10,000, which would be a really great deal, and then you depreciate that property down, say, to $5,000. And so now you have a property you bought $10,000 for, you got a deduction for $5,000. Now your basis in that property is $5,000. That's your skin in the game, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then you turn around and sell it for $20,000 for what it's worth. Now you have to pay taxes on the difference between what you sell it for and what your basis is. So now you have a $15,000 gain that you have to report.
So if you didn't take the depreciation, you'd only have a $10,000 gain.
Well, that's also really tricky, because the way the IRS law is written is that you have to reduce your basis in that property by depreciation allowable. So whether you take it or not, you have to reduce.
You're still going to be accountable for it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right. And so that's why I talk about, you know, new clients coming in not realizing that, mm-hmm. because I'm looking at a new tax return, a piece of property that's never been depreciated, but now their basis is lower than what they paid for it, and they never got the tax benefit of doing that. So you can file what they call a 3115. It's a form you attach to your tax return for a lot of different reasons, but it allows you to take all of those years of depreciation that you should have taken in the current year. Hmm. I actually saved somebody $90,000 in tax this last year.
I gotta write that 3115 down.
Yeah. Don't try and do it yourself.
No, I know, certainly. And apparently I should have talked to you before December. Anything else that you want to share before we let you go?
The only thing I can think of is, given the national shortage, we have roughly 75% of tax professionals and CPAs are expected to retire in the next 15 years. And from what I've seen through surveys that I've issued through different state boards, is that most of the professionals that I'm talking to are, at least in the state of Oregon, are looking to retire in the next 1 to 4 years. So if you have kids, if you have grandkids, encourage them to go into accounting and to be a tax accountant. It's a great profession, and I will happily talk to all of those kids about why they should be a tax accountant. It's one of my passion projects.
So we got to build the foundation for the next generation.
Yeah, a succession plan. It's so important.
Brittany Horning, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next on Our Town, we speak with Althea Rizzo from the Office of Emergency Management about, the tsunami warning we didn't have last month.